Okay, this week we're looking at some something that we've talked about before, but in a little bit different way. And it's, you know, does one size fit all with programs that we see out there? And how are the differences between certain age levels and mastery levels? And today what we're going to do is kind of go into detail on what is different and how much of a difference is there between, you know, maybe somebody who's training at 17 and somebody who's training at maybe 20, 21 years old and has more experience. How do we make those transitions, and exactly what do they look like? We want to be kind of more specific as to what things would we do differently with someone who's further along. So everyone has seen, you know, manuals, online programs, in the magazine, here's a workout. What's never mentioned or rarely mentioned is what level is it for, and then how long would you use that program, and then, you know, how long is that viable for a certain level of athlete. So today with me, as always, I have Dr. Yesus to kind of help clear up some of these questions. And Jeff Moyer, also from Dynamic Correspondence Training, also kind of weighing in as he works with high school athletes on a very regular basis and is looking at transitioning from one year to the next. We can kind of get ourselves around this whole concept of what, when, where, and why. So, Doc, to kind of start this off, you know, we've talked about this before, and you see this a lot out there, just programs, and it's not really mentioned who they're for. Could you kind of just briefly just kind of describe what's the difference between, like, let's say a high school freshman and, you know, somebody that's in college? What are the differences that you're the main differences, I guess, the largest differences that you would see when developing a training protocol for either one of these athletes?
I think it's a multifaceted both question and answer here. I think the key is when we take a look at what's the difference between a high school athlete and a collegiate athlete, if you want. Even if we just stayed with the high school athlete, there's a world of difference. Take a look at that incoming freshman. Some of them have not even finished him in puberty. Well, they're not even fully mature. Get an 18-year-older, well, let's say someone getting ready to graduate, he's comparable to anybody in college. He's as good as an adult athlete. So there's a world of difference just in the high school, you know, market. So for high school, we should even break it down. What do we do with a youngster, let's say 13 and 14 years old, who just came out of puberty, and he's just first starting to train. He's been playing sports, but he's never been in training. As opposed to, let's say, the senior, who's now been in training for 3 years. Now, how's his training going to be different? So we have to separate all of these instead of one program fits all. This is what we've been doing. This is why I severely criticize a lot of the research that's being done. And I say we should throw the results out the window unless we can specify for whom it's for. But it's just, hey, we did research showing that this program is better than this program, or this exercise is better than another. For whom? You have to answer the question.
Okay, so let's get into that. Let's talk specifics. So, you have a kid, like you just mentioned, 13, 14 years old, maybe he's middle school, and he's coming out of the eighth grade, he's getting ready to go to high school. And let's say he doesn't have much training experience at all. What would we do with him? Where would we kind of start from at that year? What would we be doing with him?
All right, here's where we do an all-around our training program for strength. And here's where the 1x20 program that I developed comes in handily. At this time, it's learning. They have to learn not only how to train, but also how to do the different exercises. This is critical. This is the stage where they learn how to do it. It's the time for developing the skills that they need. Skill is really exercise mastery. They have to be able to master all of the different exercises. As we've mentioned at some other time, learning takes a lot of repetition. not just plain repetitions, but repetitions of doing it the correct way. So here's where we have to focus. They have to learn what to do and to keep the intensity low by doing many repetitions, which still gives enough low intensity, learn how it's done.
So with that in mind, and we're talking intensity levels, normally like around 60%, is that correct? That kind of with the 1x20 idea that you conceived?
Hey, sure.
Okay.
And so a little bit more than that. It's more than 60. I mean, of course, at the end, the intensity could be closer to 85. At the beginning, it's only about 40 to 50. So the intensity changes even as you go through the full routine.
And that leads into the next question. One of the main differences, from what I understand, would be to the lower intensity zones would be extended for more prolonged periods of time at this level than they would be at the higher level. So you're going to stay in those lower intensity zones for much longer than you would if you were, you know, a college athlete or, you know, high school senior, if you have training experience. These are going to be longer, and the higher intensity zones would be much shorter. Is that correct?
Sure. See, and the reason for this is very simple. You need the longer periods of low intensity to master the exercises. If you jump high intensity, you cannot master the exercises, and you're limiting the amount of development that the body will receive. Development at very early ages needs a lot of repetition. Get a baby, you know, this is so obvious, but we miss the obvious. How long does it take for this baby to learn how to walk? It doesn't happen overnight. It happens over weeks, if not months. And then running. How long does it learn how to run? So it takes a long period of time. So now we get them at a stage where, sure, they can run. How well do they run? You have to work on their running technique. It takes time. We got to keep the intensity down while they learn good technique. Learn how to do a squat. Well, this takes multiple repetitions. They need prerequisites. They need a strong back. They need ample flexibility. They need, especially the hamstrings. So we take a look at all of the prerequisites. We have to develop all of these. So in order to learn to do an effective squat, you take months, not just 1 week or a couple of sessions, as is typically done. And you separate this from higher level athlete or collegiate athlete. If he has gone through this progression, can work now on high intensity because we're assured that his execution is correct, it's going to be safe, and he's going to get maximum results. Now you can see how the workout's going to be completely different on the youngster.
And I think one other idea there that's important to note is that because of the plasticity of his nervous system, those low levels of intensity are actually going to render the optimal adaptation and response from the athlete. So going higher would not provide a better result. Actually, it may even hinder the results. The low intensity is the optimal range for the type of adaptation that you're looking for when considering the plasticity of his nervous system. Is that correct?
That's right on. And that's one of the reasons why, another reason why we keep it low. This is what the body requires for full adaptation.
And one other point that I think that could be noted as well is that if you're getting great results, you're getting great progress at the lower intensity levels, there's no reason to start bumping the intensity levels until you start to see the results at the lower intensity levels start to slow down. Could you speak to that real quickly as well?
Sure. I mean, see, the lower intensity, for learning and for mastery, we need this. Well, you know, look at a youngster when he's learning multiplication tables. He doesn't learn these overnight. It takes quite a while. But it's the same thing with learning here. We have to keep the intensity down. You know, the youngster learning multiplication tables may feel stressed out, but we're not putting you know, stress on them by saying you have to master this in one day. It's spread out over weeks. So a lower intensity, and research has backed this up, is needed for mastery. This is how your body adapts well. So adaptation is the key to all development in the body. You do a workout, your body has to restructure itself in relation to the workouts. This can only be done when the stress levels are not too high. If the stress levels are very high, it becomes impossible for the body to go through the adaptation that is needed. It's fighting stress. It's fighting too much stress. And this is why it does not improve performance. And maybe alongside this, this is why we've seen great success with the 1x20 with collegiate and even some professional athletes. They have been overtrained with too much intensity. So when we give them a break and use some low intensity, lo and behold, their abilities improve tremendously. They do much better. Their speed goes up. Their strength levels go up. Their playing performance goes up. Well, we can see it doesn't mean you stay on this low level all the time. But for a period of time, until you get the development, then you have to move up. We all give a lot of voice to periodization. Very few people are really using periodization. Everybody talks about it. Nobody is really doing it. This is what periodization is all about. You know, you can see, you can take the general thing that they have came up with. Okay, the volume is high and it gradually comes down. The intensity increases as volume goes down. Well, this is one way of looking at it, but how many people actually practice this? It is where we run into trouble.
Okay, so having said that, now, let's say we've got the kid, incoming freshman, we've been, you know, working with him in the way that you just mentioned. Now, years are passing. Could you give a general idea, like 1 year to the next, and I know you can't be overly precise, but an idea, what changes as he becomes a sophomore, as he becomes a junior, as he becomes a senior in high school? What are the gradual changes that take place that take into account his new development and what needs to happen for further development?
Okay, I can answer this, but you know, I think I'm going to ask Jeff, well, what you see with the athletes with this kind of a program, he might be able to give more specifics, and I'll fill in anything that Jeff maybe doesn't mention.
Yeah.
Jeff, are you with this?
Yeah, definitely. With the athletes that I've had for multiple years using the 1x20 type of approach, I've noticed that, one, their adaptation is much greater the second year as far as the speed of which they progress a little bit more. You know, the gains are just as good the second year, if not the first year, for it almost seems like their body just fully now starts to really, really absorb all the light amount of stress and the exercises. You know, things just seem to come easier to them the second year. But they don't, I would say, the amount of time using the 20s before they progress to the next stage will shorten, you know, it's relative to the kid, but will shorten compared to they did the first year. And the amount of explosive exercises will start to increase slightly, and the introduction to certain exercises might come a little faster. But from what I've seen, I have a couple tennis kids, athletes right now, high schoolers in their second year, and their gains and everything, they're doing things with this one set of 20 in their second year that they were doing in their almost in their right before competition, the competition season before the summer for tennis. That I mean, their improvements are so great from doing this now. It's just their body's just eating it up. Their central nervous systems are just completely they're absorbing this stuff so much better now. The second year, it's actually really fun. And now, you know, Yosef said this before, you know, the first year is pretty easy with kids. You know, it's kind of mindless. You don't have to think too much. Just don't do too much with them. Keep it low and slow. The second year, I got to put a little thought into it because now, again, they progress a little bit faster in certain stages and with certain exercises. So that's where the variations will begin to come in a little bit. But yeah, that's what I've seen thus far.
Yeah, see, and that's good. And that's what it should be. See, so in essence, to be more specific, we're seeing a stronger body. They have more strength, and not just strength of particular muscles, but every single joint is stronger. You don't see the incidence of injuries because of this, because we're developing the entire body. We're developing all of its systems. We're developing the muscular system, developing the nervous system, developing the cardiovascular system. So, you know, aerobically, anaerobically, they're getting better. But we see improvement across the board with this type of program. And as they move out of this, then the intensity is going to increase, the number of exercises will decrease, the exercises become more specific, and so on. But here the stress is becoming greater. So we can take a look at that more specifically. But that, in essence, is the beauty of staying on the 1x20 in the early stages.
Yeah, so for example, with a couple football players, when I was working, training the team for 2 years out in Central New York, a couple of linemen, you know, maybe that first year we did the one set of 20s right before, as they progressed during that first season, when they got into more of their, you know, summer calendar before the season started, they were probably doing a total of maybe four or five explosive exercises, just trying to cover all the planes of motion. You know, just one set, and they had great results. But then going into that second year, to start after the off season or after the season, took a couple weeks off going into that second year to start with their one set of 20s. As far as general strength goes, they were doing things for 20 that they were doing for 14s and in into the 8s when they first started in the more intense stuff. So their strength improvements were huge. And then by the time we got into the summer season right before football, the total number of explosive exercises increased and the intensity of certain things and the variations began to change just a little bit. But we found with the kids that had the second year, I mean, again, the first year with the football program, we averaged 0.37 tenths of a second off of the team's 40 time. And then the second year was 0.36. And the kids that did it the second year had the same practically the same results they did after the first year, with just, you know, a few minor tweaks, and things progressed a little bit faster for them, but same results. So it was great to see.
Same results in terms of increases.
Yeah, same results. I mean, same as far as strength, as far as speed in the 40, and in their shuttle runs. Practically identical from the year before. Almost, they almost averaged 0.4 of a second both years off their 40 time. So it was fantastic.
Yeah. I just wanted to clarify, because I think some people, when you say the same results, they don't think of this as improvement. But what you're saying here is that they improved at the same rate, and the increases each year were very similar. So if they went, you know, increased by 0.3 of a second in the first year, they also increased by 0.3 or more in the second year.
Yes, sir.
I just want to kind of explain or amplify that a little bit.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, so we've seen this, all three of us have, obviously, across the board, where we get a really nice, significant result in the first off season, and normally equal, sometimes even better. I've had many off seasons where I saw a better marginal result in the second off season just by slightly tweaking the protocol with a little more intensity, a little bit more, you know, maybe some more exercises that maybe we didn't use previously. You know, just a little bit more work, not much. And what I found was is that you want to be as
subtle in the changes as possible so that you can see how the athlete responds. This way you can determine what becomes optimal. Could you speak about that, Doc? As you make changes, I find that a lot of people want to make abrupt changes and they don't make them subtly, and I think this is harmful. And could you explain the science behind that?
Sure. When you make an abrupt change, it disrupts your body. Your body likes a homeopathic state, homeostatic. So it doesn't like major changes. And this is where this is the secret to adaptation. So you're disturbing the body. So the body says, hey, I got to get back to normal here. So it makes these adaptations. As it makes these adaptations, it undergoes what we call supercompensation. And this is why you're getting stronger, say, for example. And you're getting stronger, so the next time you have this particular workout or you're playing this particular game, you will not undergo the same amount of stress. So this is the beauty of it all. But when you have an abrupt change, and he says, whoa, I really got to restructure over here. This is major, so it's spending so much time trying to get itself balanced again, it's not really seeing the results. When it's subtle, body interprets this, okay, well, there's a little bit of change here, we can take care of that. A little bit of supercompensation, everything is fine. This is how we're continually making good progress. But when it's an abrupt change, there's no progress. There's a lot of turmoil. By the time it all gets straightened out, it may or may not be any significant gains. So that's why you never want to have an abrupt change.
So I think it speaks to the point that you made earlier, or the question that was brought up was that, you know, how do pre-programmed kind of plans, how do they work? You know, when you hand something to somebody, okay, here's the plan, or you read it online, you have to find the threshold of adaptivity for the athlete, especially if it's a lower level athlete. You got to find out what they're going to respond to the best, which you can't do with a pre-planned program. You have to experiment a little bit. Am I correct about that, Doc?
Oh, all the way, yes, very much. And there's a tremendous amount of experimentation. This is where coaches have to be much smarter in how they deal with individual athletes. This is the whole concept behind the principle of individualization. Every athlete is an individual. Has to be treated this way. You can't just have 10 different athletes and give them the same program and expect the same results. Never happened. It never will happen.
Now, coaches are going to say, they're going to kind of balk at that a little bit because they say, hey, look, I got 50 guys that I got to train together, and there's no way I can be individualized. Would you say, this is kind of the response I normally give them, I said, listen, try to take the if you're going to make an error on the intensity level being too low. If you can't be totally individualized in a team setting, which is understandable for some coaches, would you say that, you know, kind of erring on the side of too low will always be the best policy as opposed to going on the hot side?
Oh, definitely. Because if you go on a high side, you're looking at injury. So you want to keep it down, which is still going to give you results, but you're not going to have the same incidence of injury. You can have better learning, and as a result, you may get better progress and more productivity out of the athletes. Rather than going too high, where if they don't get injured, stress levels are so high, they don't get the same amount of effective or beneficial adaptation, but you don't see the same progress. Well, lower is always better. But maybe I should bring out how most coaches like to work in the 85 to 95 range. All you have to do is keep it down to, let's say, the 75 to 80 range, or 80, even 85. This is going to be much more productive than being up around 95%.
Now, this kind of reminds me of a conversation that Jeff and I had, and I think this is very relevant to this discussion. You know, most coaches who are physical preparation coaches also are
live in an environment maybe where they are working for a team or a school, and they have to collaborate to whatever degree with the sport coach, who is also putting the athlete under load. And this can be problematic. And I suggest a collaboration. They need to get together and kind of discuss the loads that they're putting the athletes under, because each one affects the other one. And Jeff and I were talking about this earlier this year, you know, where he was collaborating with the sports coach to make sure that they get optimal, you know, good balance between the two loads. Jeff, could you kind of describe that process, how you can run into problems, and then, you know, how do you fix that? How do you make that so that it works in an optimal way?
Well, this, I mean, this is what we're doing here in Pittsburgh. I work with a tennis academy and a tennis coach named Chris Kennedy. And what we're trying to do, I know it's different with a team setting than an individual sport. This is what I'm doing, at least in the with the individual sport. And it's, again, not a perfect model, but this is what we're attempting to do. You know, now that it's, you know, fall going into winter, what we're going to do, you know, the season, competition season for tennis is kind of coming to an end, even though high school girls tennis is going on here in Pennsylvania. We're trying to look at each athlete, and come up with a plan, look at them technically first. What do we need to improve? What do they need to improve? How can we do that? And then, taking like a calendar, of a week and trying to plan out for that athlete, what is that athlete going to do at with the sport coach, and what is that athlete going to do with me when they're with me, and how can we best lower the total volume on the athlete, but yet still get the greatest gains with it, and kind of doing, you know, talking exactly about what Doc talked about with the motor learning and doing it at a low intensity. You know, we have a couple kids we don't allow, like, particularly working on the backhand right now, so we're not allowing a couple kids to touch a racket or practice their backhand for at least 2 weeks. And then what they're doing is just constantly every day practicing the weight shift, the hip rotation, separation, the weight shift, the hip rotation, the separation with the shoulders. And then in the weight room or in the gym with me, we're doing exercises, specialized exercises to improve and enhance these aspects. So then when they go back out onto the court, it is much improved. And thus far, we're seeing very good progress with the couple athletes that we are doing this with. And the hope is to do it with all the athletes, tennis athletes that we work with, and then come up with a plan looking at their competitions, because there are some winter competitions, but mainly trying to get them to peak for the summer season, since that's the most important. How can we then plan backwards and, again, work on their mechanics, the physical abilities in their mechanics, and do the things on the court with the sport coach as well that they need to. So, like, you know, the analogy we're trying to use with the parents and with the kids is, you know, the stress of tennis and the practice is equivalent to an elephant, and the stress that, you know, the physical stress that I'm placing on them is equivalent of an elephant, and they are a teeter-totter. And if both elephants are going up and down, or we got to make sure both elephants are going up and down, because if both elephants are very high, that board is going to break. So we're trying to have, you know, follow somewhat weekly a Charlie Francis, if you want to, a Charlie Francis high-low model, where on a Monday, Wednesday, Friday, they're with me. We're doing the physical abilities, strength, you know, all that stuff. And then with the sport coach, it's a lower day. It's more technique. It's more aerobic in nature. And on Tuesday, Thursday, Saturdays, they're more higher intensity, so to speak, with the sport coach. And on those days, they're much lower, soft tissue, light conditioning, if anything. On those days. So that's the model we're trying to do with the individual sports. What I did in the team sport with high school football, you know, that was a little different. That was more just trying to get a plan, an idea of what the sport coach was going to do, the 7-on-7 tournament that they may have, or the practice that they did, and I was just trying to accommodate to them, and then you know, pick his brain for the week, so that way I can plan accordingly. But as of now, this is what we're trying to do here in Pittsburgh with at least our tennis athletes, since the sport coach and I work hand in hand. I know that is not always sufficient with a lot of strength and conditioning coaches and sport coaches. But we're having pretty good success thus far. And once it fully turns winter here and everyone's indoors and tennis season's officially over for the high school level, we plan on trying to do this with every athlete. And we'll see how I'll be able to give you the results on how it officially turns out by next summer. But we're seeing good results thus far, at least from a motor learning and technical standpoint.
Maybe I could interject one thing here, Jeff.
Yes, sir.
I think you're on the right path, and I think you will start seeing better and better results. But let's go back to that comment made by some coaches saying they have too many athletes that they can't individualize the programs. Well, I think they can. Not only do they have some assistance, the coaches have to be able to analyze the weaknesses or the needs of each athlete. Now, they look at film during the season till they're blue in the face. What do they look at? They only look at strategy. If they would start looking a little bit about physical abilities or skills, like for example, hey, look at this guy, this receiver, he can never get free. The defender is on his back all the time. Oh, what can we do? So for that person, you put it down. Hey, in his training, we got to work on this particular skill. And when you work on that skill, well, what is he lacking? Is he lacking the strength involved? Is he lacking the ability to execute the skill? So this could be one element that for this athlete, he's going to be working on that you tell him. So, you know, like the first week of a program, and they all start off with some general exercises. Then you take each athlete and say, okay, now I also want you doing this. Another athlete, now I want you doing this. So you can individualize it to a good extent. There's that we can't do this because of numbers.
Well, I'd also like to add, Doc, if you don't mind, again, it's not perfect, and I'm not saying I ran a great program with Skinny Atlas, but this is what I did to try to make it as individualized as best as possible. You know, with the use of the iPhone certainly helps as far as watching and videoing athletes and also groups of athletes. So, you know, we'd go out onto the fields since we had it right near the weight room when we could, or in the hallway since it's winter pretty much 12 months out of the year up in central New York, and video the kids running or cutting, whatever it is we were trying to work on. And then later on that evening with like apps such as the Coach's Eye or other apps, I would go through them and try to watch the best I can. And then the next session or the next day, I would talk to the kids. This is what I'd see. This is what we need to improve. Or again, with the Coach's Eye or other great apps, I could just easily email it or text it to the kid. So that worked well. And then as far as programming goes, I try to have each sheet for, an individual sheet for each kid. And then I'd have them, try to put onus on them to fill it out and answer the questions at the end and stuff like that. And, use an Excel sheet towards the end of the week to then, put in all the information. It's a lot of work. I'm not going to lie. It's not easy to individualize, a program, especially when I had, all of modified, all of JV and all of varsity, at any one time, but that's what worked as best as I could in that setting.
But it can be done, and I think even on a collegiate level, on a pro level, there are many assistants. So you can have assistants that specialize, let's say, in particular skills. So they can be working more with the athletes when these are the skills that have to be developed, or the strength, specialized exercises or particular skills. That could be another assistant. But see, they all have to be developed. And not just have an assistant just for the sake of distributing the loads. Now, this is good, but it's not improving the players. So I think you're on the right path. See, it could be done. If you decide that it has to be done, you can always find ways of doing it.
Yes, sir.
That's the bottom line.
So as we see this kind of, you know, this idea of collaboration amongst the coaches and kind of trying as best we can to individualize the training protocol for the athlete, I think that you can see that the real transition from freshman to senior isn't a preset idea, actually. It's not in stone either. It's going to be according to the lines of improvement that have developed year to year, and the changes are going to be made gradually. Now, when you look back from senior year back to freshman year, you'll say, okay, there's quite a bit of changes that we made, and there's, you know, the way we're training now is quite a bit different. But it was done subtly and gradually over the course of time, and so that the body of the athlete adapted very seamlessly and took improvement every year. Marginal improvement was excellent. And the two analogies that I make when coaches call me and ask me about how to make the changes, how to dictate the training, you know, one of them is a music lesson. You know, I tell them all the time, you know, there's no way you can cram enough to have 4 years of experience in music. It takes the time that it takes. You have to practice, and you have to be, you know, kind of dutiful in that way and diligent. But you can't cram it in. You can't be a 10-year guy in 2 years. It's just not going to happen. And the other, according to the adaptation kind of model that we talked about earlier, and making subtle changes, is kind of like, you know, people say when you put I think it was a goose or a duck in a pot with water, and if you turn the heat up very gradually, eventually you'll kill them because it can't tell the changes. And I think that's it's analogous to the way the body works. If you gradually just take up the intensity, the body doesn't use its more alarm resources to adapt. It'll adapt very seamlessly and nicely each step of the way, without any alarm, and using other resources that don't lend itself to long-term restructuring. Is that correct, Doc, in the line of thinking there?
Yes, yes. And I think since we're kind of running out of time here, it might be good to keep examining this question and take a closer look at what should be done on a collegiate and professional level. Spend most of our time talking about the high school, which is, I think, the most critical in the initial stages. Let's take a look at, you know, how this changes and what we do later on, and some of these things are already developed.
Yeah, I agree, Doc. I think we can talk a little bit more specifically about how we would adjust the strength training, and then some, maybe even the running, and maybe some of the jumps and then plyos, how that would all adjust. So I think maybe that's a great opportunity for us to kind of look at that at the next levels as well, having covered a lot of the high school stuff now today. So next week, let's look at the collegiate and then maybe into the pro level, discussing how these changes are made from 1 year to the next and what are kind of landmarks or, you know, places where we notice, you know, changes physiologically and how we adjust to those. So do you guys have any parting thoughts on this discussion today?
No,
I think I covered it.
I agree.
Okay, well, let's get this discussion up next week. Very interesting material on making these adjustments from year to year. And so I look forward to talking to you guys next week. Hey, very good.
Great, thank you.
Thank you.